Yes, Coach. I wonder if there's a downside when you have the quarterback position and the players taking a long time to separate themselves and make the decision for you, I guess the way to put it.
Yeah, but that's kind of up to them. You know, like I said in here before, you know, I told the quarterbacks, I said, quit looking around for me to make a decision about who's going to play. How about you playing good enough that I don't have a choice? That's what you can control. That's what you can do. And somebody needs to do that. And it's sort of, you know, taking shape to some degree, but somebody's got to do it. And, you know, where you all think that, you know, like whoever we name as a starter for the first game, that's like the end of it. It's not the end of it. It's just the beginning. So what if a guy doesn't play good? Not entitled to keep playing. And the guy that doesn't play is got every opportunity to practice and be more consistent and win the team over so that when he gets an opportunity to play, he plays really well. I mean, we have changed quarterbacks around here a few times during the season. So I know you guys are looking for an end, but it's not even going to be the end in the first game. You're looking at me kind of funny. Is that, am I not explaining that very well?
I didn't explain it very well in my question, I suspect, but I was wondering about
I don't want to answer it because we're going to make the best of it for our team. And our team has to make the best of it as well. So, and whoever plays the position, everybody's got to play well around them and do the best job that they can to help them play well.
I think what Kirk McNair was trying to ask, and here I am guilty of trying to think what another man's thoughts are, was he trying to ask if the quarterback situation with 3 and 4 guys getting a lot of reps slows down the offensive progress. Is that what you think?
Yeah, that's what I gathered. And, you know.
And I, you kudos, know, that's a good question. I'll ask
Kirk
you.
For asking the question. Yeah.
Well, you know, Kirk's been around you know, Saban can throw a knife at him and he's going to be fine. He's knife proof. But what do you think it slows down the progress of the entire offense?
Yes.
I do too.
Absolutely. In an ideal situation, you would have your guy heading into camp and he would get the majority of the reps with the ones. And that is not the case, although it certainly appears that Jalen Milroe is getting more reps with the ones than the other two. So I think we can deduce from what we have seen and what we've been told that the starter for game one is going to be Jalen Milroe.
I agree. There's not a lot of room for movement
And there's no reason for Nick Saban to come out and definitively say, all right, Jalen Milroe, he's our guy. He's our guy for the rest of the season. You know, doesn't need to do that. You go back, you look at, Jay Coker, right? Like he, I think started and then lost the job and then ultimately won the job.
And came back next year, won a national championship.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Coach Saban's right. Like, obviously he's been through it that, there have been times when Alabama has switched quarterbacks and, you know, I think it's the,
like halftime in national championship.
Yeah.
Game.
It's a little more imperative, at least from where I sit, to have a starter, to have your guy going into Texas week, right? And so after game one, it would be good for Saban and the rest of the staff, I think beneficial for one guy to sort of emerge a little bit so there's not a question mark of who's going to play and who should get more reps in practice in preparation for Texas. But you know darn well that they have been preparing for Texas for a long time.
Like a year.
Yeah. Alabama was extremely fortunate.
But I think they've got
call in the with Bryce Young in the end zone that they called roughing the passer, it was just one of the worst calls I've ever seen. And that really helped Alabama out a lot. And also with the injuries that Texas sustained.
With Quinn Ewers.
Most specifically.
Let me ask you this, Lars. All right. And key your mic, as we say in the business there, Justin. Is there a chance that Alabama may go through the first part of the season, maybe the entire season, although it is not his forte, two quarterback system?
Yeah, I think it's possible because, if one guy just doesn't emerge, then he'll keep searching for it and searching for that person to, as he always says, win over the team, win over the locker room. And I think that's much harder for Tyler Buchner than the other guys because Buckner's a transfer and came in late. And I still think there is a little separation just based on what I've been told, that separation between Milroe and Simpson, and then there's Tyler Buchner.
Right.
But you never know because we're going to see all three of them here in about, nine days. We're going to see all three of them in 9 days. And, you know, there have been many, many, many quarterbacks throughout history who just aren't great practice players. But then once the whistle starts and the action is live, they are absolutely transformed and become much more efficient. And so we'll see. We'll see. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we could see two or three quarterbacks throughout the season. I sure hope we don't, though, because I think that creates problems for the offense, for production. And I think we really could, but I don't want to see it.
What is it, the old saying, if you've got two starting quarterbacks, you really have none?
Yeah.
Because nobody is separated. But my opinion on using two would be more about the differences in the way they move the football. And I think that, you know, and obvious, I think pocket passing plays. Say that again. Pocket passing plays.
Triple P.
I think that maybe Tyler comes in, but more of an RPO type situation, you'd put Milroe in. I don't know, but I'll go back to this. I've never seen Saban do that. I don't even remember if he ever did it at Michigan State or LSU, using two quarterbacks throughout a game.
Do you think Tommy Rees is that creative? I mean, I know he's a great offensive coordinator, but you have to be pretty smart and outside the box to use three quarterbacks in that way. Do you think Tommy Rees can do that?
Well, I think it's going to be two, and I think it's going to be Simpson and Milroe, and their skill sets are very different. And I think it's sort of depending on, gosh, would you even rotate quarterbacks in the middle of a series? Maybe, depending on down distance and where the ball is on the field and whether or not you want to run an RPO where you have Milroe is basically a extra running back in there and maybe the most athletic player on the entire team. You don't want that. I know you don't want you don't want to have two quarterbacks toggling back and forth.
And that's, we'll go back to the original statement from the top of the hour. If you're going to try and run a two quarterback system, having three and four vying for that slot doesn't allow you to practice with two different types of quarterbacks. Because they're just trying to still figure out who's going to be the guy that's going to take the snaps.
Also, it's harder for the receivers to develop chemistry with the quarterback because the balls are thrown differently. They are thrown to different spaces. Why do you think Patrick Mahomes, for goodness sakes, is playing in the preseason? It's because Kansas City has a bunch of new wide receivers and Andy Reid wants Mahomes to develop chemistry and a rapport with those wide receivers, really young wide receivers, including Justin Ross, right, who torched Alabama.
Guy from Alabama.
Yeah, he's had so many injuries. I'm rooting for that kid. He's got so much talent. But Andy Reid wants Mahomes to develop that, that rapport with his wide receivers in real live game action, because you just can't replicate the speed and the intensity of game action in a practice. So I've been told.
Wow. So you know.
Yeah.
Hey, coming up, we're going to talk some more Alabama football with our good friend Bill Lumpkin. His father is a Hall of Fame sports writer, the Birmingham Post-Herald, and he has followed up a really fine career as more of a freelance writer. I think he did write for the News and the Post-Herald for a while. Now it seems to me he just travels the world. I see Facebook posts from Las Vegas, Europe. He's leading a very good life now, but he'll join us on the other side of this break as you listen to Big Noon Sports.
Hey. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A sizzling summer afternoon, lots of sunshine, the high today near 100. For tonight, fair with a low at 75. Excessively hot weather again tomorrow and Saturday, partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs will stay very close to 100. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 97 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. And joined now by Bill Lumpkin Jr., longtime friend, longtime sports writer. Of course, like a few of us in this business, not myself or Lars included, but kind of lived through the shadow of your dad because he was just an absolute icon and still is. But you're a pretty damn good writer in your own right. Bill, it's Matt and Lars. How are you?
I'm good. Thank y'all for having me today.
I brought it up, so I'll ask you. My son's had to deal with this a little bit. Isn't your dad that guy?
And yeah, it's always been that way. Yeah.
Boom. You still there? I was really anticipating a wonderful answer, but it just dropped.
It happens.
Yes, with all the amazing technology and improvements we've made over the years, I haven't found out a way to get the cell phone dropout.
Well, I'm sure we'll get him back here in a second. Another topic that I wanted to hit on was Tua and Ronan Clark. We talked about this yesterday that Ryan Clark, who's an analyst for ESPN, played in the NFL for 13 years, he joked earlier this week on an episode of NFL Live that Tua looked like he had skipped the gym and that, quote, he might spend a lot of time in the tattoo parlor. He was not at the dinner table eating what the nutritionist had advised. All right, we're going to go back.
Let's go back to Bill.
And we will pick up this story here in a segment or two.
Indeed. Bill, you got us now?
Yeah, I'm here. I just gave you the secret to the mint, too. It's just
and we missed it.
My dog heard it. I hope she didn't go to blabbing.
Continue with thoughts about your father.
What? I was telling him one time, when your dad's like that, you always want to top him a little bit. So one night I was sitting at the dinner table and I said, I just met somebody famous. I don't know who it was. And I said, who's the five most famous people you've ever met? And I thought, I'm going to really top him today because I've just met a couple people. And he goes, let me think about that for a minute. And I said, no, you can't throw out your friends like Bear Bryant or anybody like that because I've met him too and all. And he goes, well, you know, I had beer with Dizzy Dean one time.
Wow.
And he said, I had bean soup with DiMaggio. And he goes, let me think about it. I was like, never mind. I'm done. And, he could spin a tale. He could tell a story. And, you know, he's a great writer. But, you know, it's never a dull moment. It's funny you brought it up because he would give us gifts sometimes where he forged the autograph. And you never really knew. He gave my cousin a golf book for Christmas one year, and it was autographed by Jack Nicklaus. And we all knew he had done it. And so one year I called him. I was a big Reds fan. He'd written on a lamp, Johnny Bench. And I had several things by Bench, and I could tell it wasn't. But this weekend, they were having an Atlanta Braves alumni weekend. And one of the pitchers for the Braves is a guy named Jim Nash. I don't know if you know Jim Nash, but older guy. Well, my granddad's relatives were named Nash. And he always told us that that was Uncle Jim Nash. And we had a baseball card. He had wrote Uncle Jim Nash. First guy I bump into at the Braves game this weekend is Jim Nash. I go over there and I go, hey, we're related, Uncle Jim Nash. And he looks at me like...
Similar story with Kenny Anderson.
Yeah.
So he looks at me and he goes, how are we related? And so I tell him, he goes, no, I don't think... He goes, we might be related, but that ain't who I know, not that way. And I come back and tell my mother, she goes, you know your dad just made that up. And I tell my brother, and he goes, we're not related to Uncle Jim Nash. I was like, I don't guess so.
Wow. Yeah, we have an incredibly similar story. My father told me when I was very young that Ken Anderson, who was a starting quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, was my uncle. And before games, we had the old rotary phone. And if you dialed your own phone number and hung it up, the phone would ring. And he would do that, and then he would act like he was talking to Ken Anderson in the locker room. And not only that, he was giving Ken advice on what plays to call and what not to call. Then he would do the same thing at halftime. And, boy, he just he went to great lengths to continue the charade. And I'm not kidding. I believed him until I was, like, in seventh grade because my mom was kind
of... That's hilarious.
Yeah, I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And so every school, like, class photo from first grade, second grade, all the way up to seventh, I am wearing a Ken Anderson jersey and orange pants.
So, whoa.
That's amazing. He was my favorite player growing up, too.
Oh, wow.
I bumped into him in 87. I was sports editor at Huntsville News. We had, like, a 15,000 circulation. And I wrote it. They had like four guys from Alabama, Manuel King, and a couple guys from UNA. So I sent them a letter. I was like, hey, can I come up here and do a story? They're like, yeah, come on. And I took another guy and a photographer. We go up there. They put us like on the 50. And first guy I bump into is Kenny Anderson. I'm like, oh my God, there's my idol from all time. And, hey, I loved Kenny Anderson. I still am a big Bengals fan. I'm a Reds fan for some reason.
A couple years ago, I was doing a radio show with Al Del Greco, and Al had gotten to be friends with Ken Anderson, and he had, unbeknownst to me, Ken calls into the show, and he pretends to be my uncle, and then asking me why I wasn't at, crazy Aunt Elizabeth's family reunion last week.
That's great.
And he carried it on, and since then we've become friends. And I was really disappointed yesterday when he didn't make the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know. He deserves to be in there so bad.
On air, and I kind of had a little meltdown.
Yeah, disappointment doesn't even come close to describing how Lars was. And he went on for about 10 minutes on how...
I am too.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine you were upset. Well, we've known each other for dang near 40 years, and I didn't know you were an Anderson guy, so we can just say that's the reason we got you on today. Because I could just step away from the mic. Justin and I could go get a cold beer, and y'all talk about Kenny Anderson for the rest of the show.
You're talking about pranks. Back when the media was fun, you know, I was starting to write for the Post-Herald when I was doing high school, and I'd go up there after the games, and they'd always try to pull pranks on me. So they pulled this joke where they could pick your card. You called the professor, and he could pick your card, and they'd play it on me every night. And they finally told me how to do it. And another guy would be on the phone, and you'd call the professor, and when he'd go, spades, diamonds, clubs, and whatever it was, he'd go, is the professor there? And he'd go, ace, king, queen. Then he'd go, hey, professor. Then he'd answer the phone, and you'd go, your card is the jack of clubs. And I mean, that was, to me, when I was in high school, that was the funniest trick. And, and I was like, back when the media, you could have fun with it. Now it's totally different.
Is there a favorite story that you've worked on in your career, one that has stuck with you through the years?
Well, I was when I first got to Gadsden, I was working for the Gadsden Times. And when I was in high school, I was small. I was like 5'4", couldn't play football. I was doing stats and all. So by the time I got to Gadsden, I was about 225, and I was about almost 6 foot. I was good friends with one of the high school coaches. And he's like, "Hey, you know, it's August. Why don't you come out here and practice with us?" And he goes, "We'll set it up where you can run with the meat squad offense. The first team offense gets meat squad defense, and you can be a running back." I was like, "Hey, you know, that sounds like a great idea." So I wrote this big story that I had the moves of Jim Brown, and I could do slashing like O.J. Simpson before he was a slasher. And so I get over there. So it's going to be 3 days. So the first day wasn't too bad. Second day, I see people counting to see which one I am so they can hit me. And I'm like, you know, this is not very good. So the third day, I can barely move. I'm so sore. And I get over there, and it's Coach DeLorenzo at Gadsden. He goes, "Man," he goes, "it's raining." And he goes, "I've got a scrimmage to the first team defense. Do you mind running against them?" I'm like, "I don't know." And he goes, "There are a lot of people over here to watch." So I was like, "All right, I'll do it." First play, I can see the offensive linemen. They're pointing to which way I'm going. And I was like, "Oh, this isn't going to be good." So it's a little sweep. I take off on the sweep. And there's nobody over there. I think, "I'm going to score. This is going to be a touchdown." I get about 10 yards downfield, and two guys dive at my knee and tear every ligament in my knee.
Oh, no.
And so I'm laying in the hospital. Phone rings. Ray Perkins. I'm kind of doped up. And he goes, "Hey, Bill." I'm like, "Well, Coach." He goes, "Don't you know your eligibility's up?" I'm like, it is now. And then right after that, this guy calls from Sports Illustrated. And he says, "Hey, we heard about this. We want to run one of those little blurbs that used to be on the front, in the front section about this. It's called Plimpton Meat Lumpkin." And I'm doped up. I was like, who would do this? And so I hung up on him like 6 times. He goes, "No, I'm serious. I'm serious." I was like, "All right." So yeah, I remember that more than anything, because I still got the scars to prove it. And it's in Sports Illustrated and all this, and it was fun. You know, but like I said, back then. And then the other thing is, still, I was in Huntsville at the Huntsville News. We did this little prediction column on high schools. And we tried to have fun with it. Like, if somebody got beat 65 to nothing and then they lost 60, I'd go, "Well, they look like they're going to lose 130 to nothing." And, you know, guy'd call up and go, "Hey, you sold every paper in ARAB this week." I was like, "Hey, that's the point, you know?" So the coach at Huntsville High School was kind of on to it, Greg Patterson. So he said, "Hey, will you come over here and speak to our pep rally and let me write the speech?" And I was like, "You're going to write the speech?" And he's, yeah, they were playing Grissom, who's their biggest rival, as Matt would tell you. So he writes the 10 reasons why Grissom is better than Huntsville. And he wants me to say it in front of their pep rally. So I go over there and I take three bodyguards. We're dressed in trench coats. We got toy machine guns. We got a briefcase we're handcuffed with, like we got the secrets to the Mint. And we're over there. We're going to have fun. So the Panther mascot comes up, and my friend, the Panther, reaches out to shake his hand, and he flips her. He didn't know it's a girl. Flips her on her, and we're like, "Okay, this is not going to be good." So we start top 10 reasons why Grissom is better than Huntsville. The second one was like, "My parents have more money than yours."
I've seen that.
And then the third one was, their cheerleaders are prettier than yours. And each one I said, the crowd's getting closer and closer. And then the fourth one, I don't even know what the fourth one was. Here they came. It was a mob. So we take off running, and the coach is like, "It's a joke. It's fake. It's a joke." And I mean, it almost turned into that night, like, he was having to tell the parents, like, "Hey, I was in on this. I wrote the speech." I mean, it was a crazy thing. And when I got back to the paper, it was on like the police scanner, and my boss goes, "Did you have anything to do with that?" I was like, I don't know what you're." He goes, "Don't do it again." I was like, "Okay, I'm good."
Oh, That says a lot about Greg Patterson. I know him well. Says a lot about the Huntsville-Grissom rivalry.
That was with Matt a few other times.
Yeah. it got a little over the top, as you just explained several times. We're going to actually talk some Alabama football. Let's do that. Good stories, though, okay. Bill. Appreciate every one of them. But if you hang through the break, we'll get down and we'll find out who really knows the keys to the mint and the Alabama quarterback situation. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Later in the show, we'll be talking to Marquise Mays. Right now, we're going to talk to Lars Anderson with a breaking story, and then back to Bill Lumpkin.
Yeah, this isn't good. Out of Broncos camp, wide receiver Jerry Jeudy, as we all know, a former Alabama player, he took an end around during practice, and as he was running, pulled up lame, grabbed his right upper leg, looked like his hamstring. He was very upset. Cart came out to get him. He had trouble getting on the cart. Teammates came over before he was taken inside, and then he needed help getting off the cart and getting inside. And for a wide receiver to have what appears to be a hamstring injury, and it, you know, we don't know the extent of it. It's a tough break for Jerry Jeudy and the Broncos and Sean Payton and Russell Wilson.
Oh man. You hate to hear that.
Yes.
Especially when he's that much pain. You wonder if it's not just a pull. Anyway, Bill Lumpkin, back to you. Tell us who's going to start to quit. What's the quarterback situation in Alabama?
Well, I'm trying to drop Jeudy off my fantasy team as you say that. your guess is as good as mine. I think Saban knows because, I mean, he's smiling and laughing more than you've ever seen him at the media these days. I listened to this thing yesterday, and I think they all play the first game, and you know whoever does the best starts against Texas. And I think they want somebody beside Milroe to start. And I think, you know, they didn't bring Buckner down here to sit on the bench either, but to learn that system in a short period of time, so, you know, I don't know. I guess, you tell me. I think they want Ty Simpson to win it.
That may be true. And 2 weeks ago, Lars was on that bandwagon. I opened the show with this. Would Saban continue the season playing two?
I think he'll play whoever wins. You know, you remember that night in Ole Miss when he started Cooper Bateman and got down where they ended up throwing 100 passes, and then he'd go to Jake Coker in the middle of the game. And, you know, we were out in Dallas that night. I got engaged at tailgate that night where he started Blake Barnett. And first series, here comes Jalen Hurts out.
Right.
So, I think he knows. The way he's smiling and laughing, it's almost like he's laughing at, like, y'all keep picking us fifth. This is a pretty good football team we've got. He goes, this is the best running back group they've had, and if they're going to play smash mouth and some things like that, you know, just don't throw interceptions. And, you know, that's where Milroe made so many mistakes last year, where he was, you know, turning the ball over. So I think he wants somebody that doesn't turn it over.
Do you think we are going to see a philosophical shift on the offensive side of the ball? More just ground and pound, run the clock, you know, take the air out of the ball, and just, as you said, maybe more play action. Just you want your quarterback, just don't make a mistake. Embrace the philosophy that every possession that ends with a kick, whether it's a field goal attempt, extra point, or even a punt, that's a good possession.
I think he would like to do that. I don't know in today's age where you can do that, but if you're, you know, Georgia's done it, just be physical and, you know, have a guy that doesn't turn the ball over and make some plays and, you know, I think they're the tight ends. I think they're pretty, underrated, that people are going to be surprised at their tight ends this year with the kid they got out of Maryland. And, I think they're going to throw to the tight end and use them. And they got, you know, good running backs and their offensive line. You know, if the big kid from Iowa starts, I think, you know, they're going to have a pretty stout offensive line. So yeah, I would think he would like to do that. I think their defense could be, really good. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think they are.
I was on a different show the other day, and I was asked, it was in Nebraska, and they're asking me if can Matt Rhule turn this around as quickly as Nick Saban turned it around, and how did Nick Saban turn around so fast? All right, well, that's sort of a difficult question to answer in about 30 seconds, but I pointed to the recruitment of Julio Jones. And once Nick signed Julio, that sort of opened up the floodgates to all these other 5-stars, 4-stars who wanted to come to Alabama, and that Julio ended up being that program-changing recruit. Do you agree with that? And how would you answer the question? Okay, Nick Saban arrives in 2007. In 2009, he basically wins a national championship with a core of guys who are already here under Mike Shula. What, speaking of, like, you know, the keys to the mint.
Yeah, I would absolutely say the same thing that you said about Julio Jones. I think that was the key. If he goes somewhere else, you know, what happens? But, you know, Shula had a pretty good team, those last couple of years. He was a couple of plays away, and, I think there was some talent there. And then I think when Saban came in, it was just completely different. You know, it's funny, Jim Bunch is on my Facebook that played under Bryant, and they were on Facebook this morning laughing about Big C was on there saying that Bryant came up and said, "Did you register today?" And Bunch goes, "He never asked me that." I said, "Yeah, you were taking football 101. And he goes, "Yeah, that's the truth." He said, "But he did tell us we needed to graduate, but we came for athletics, not academics." And I think, you know, Saban, I think, you know, Saban's, he's probably the best there's been. But Julio and, you know, I was watching one of the replays. I think it was a 2010, one of the 10 games. And, you know, everybody talks about McCarron being a game manager, but he threw a good football. And he had, you know, they lined up and, you know, Trent Richardson back there, they played smash mouth and threw, you know, and through to Julio and when they needed to, but they had a great defense too.
Well, the difference in the two times they played LSU when Alabama won the second one was a 21-0 in New Orleans was the fact that Saban said, "All right, we're gonna need AJ to throw a football," and they threw the football, and it was exactly what Alabama needed, because then they opened up Trent Richardson.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that first game was on the other night, and I kept watching it, and I was like, how did they lose this game? I mean, they're just going up and down the field, and then the field goal kicker, of course, missed about 5 kicks. But I was like, how did they lose this game? I was like, because they were just dominating the game on the line of scrimmage. They'd get down there and couldn't score and miss field goal. And, you know, they had – but that's what they were playing. Trent Richardson, smash mouth, get 4 or 5 yards and throw, and then – you know, McCarron had to make some throws, and he was a good quarterback that did it.
Well, and, you know, his record in pro football speaks for itself in a lot of ways. I mean, he hung around.
He's another Bengal.
That's right. How did you end up loving all these Ohio teams? Were you born in Ohio, you know, and I just didn't know it?
No, you know, it's funny. In 1969, I worked the scoreboard out at Rickwood Field for the A's, and the ticker tape would come across. And this guy was a Pirates fan. He goes, "Who are you going to pull for?" And I said, "Man, I like that Pete Rose and Johnny Bench." And I said, I think I'll be a Reds fan. And from that day on, I was a Reds fan. And I said, well, I'm a Reds fan. I need to be a Bengals fan. And I just loved Kenny Anderson back then. And I was like, so I've stuck with him through and through, good times and bad. I tell people in 87 and 86, I was, they were 2-14 or whatever they were. And I was in Las Vegas. I bought a ticket on them to win the Super Bowl at like 40,000-1 just as a lark. And they don't go to the Super Bowl. And they're one play away from winning. And Lewis Phillips, of course, has an interception here right in the chest. And the next play, Montana throws the winning touchdown. And at the time, I knew Phillips pretty well. And I called and I was like, you know what you just cost me?
Yeah, he played at UNA, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the Super Bowl right there. And tragically, Lewis Phillips lost his life, I think, in a car accident. But he kept, I mean, it just hit him right between the 2 and the 4.
And, I know.
years later, wrote a book with Bruce Arians, and he hammered this point home to me. He said, really, really, really bad things happen the play after you drop an interception.
That's true.
It is true. I need to ask you just real quick about Hugh Freeze and Auburn and what your assessment is of Hugh Freeze and what he's done so far. And, you know, he's had a couple really big victories on the recruiting road.
Well, you know, his track record kind of speaks for itself, and it seems like, you know, he kind of brought in a whole new team, so you're kind of anxious to see what some of these guys can do down there because he brought in so many new guys out of the portal. But he seems to be getting some good recruits. It's a brutal schedule for the first time out. You know, what's successful at Auburn this year? You know, I've heard some of them like, oh, we're going to be 10-2 or 8-4. But you look at that schedule and you know what is successful for them the first year. But I do think he's building them back. He's gotten, you know, some great recruits. And we know he's a good coach. We've seen that before. He can stay out of trouble and he's got good, I think he's got good, you know, I've known Cadillac Williams since I was in Gadsden and for keeping him on the staff. And I think they're going to be much better. But whether that's, you know, turns into wins and losses this year, it's hard to say because, you know, the transfer portal changes everything. You don't know what some of these guys do or what they can't do.
All right. As we wrap it up, give me your East Division, West Division winners, SEC Championship, and your top four going to the playoffs, and who's going to win it all?
Well, you know that I dress up as an Alabama fan every week, so I'm hard to pick against them. So I'm going to say
it's you got some new overalls.
I know I got, you know, it's funny. I started out with a, you know, I have that championship belt that weighs about 6 pounds of WWE, and I've got the Flavor Flav chain. And now my wife, each time, she's like, are you really going to wear that? And my friend Robbie Davis bought me one of the chains, and then Lori. But this year, I've already had a couple people like, are you going to be there with all that stuff? I was like, yeah, I'll be on there. So I have fun with it, and you know, I think Alabama's good. I really think they're going to be good. I think Georgia could be good. So I'm going to say Alabama wins the West. I know that's, you know, chalk, and I think Georgia wins. And you know, I'm not really sold on LSU like everybody else because I've just never been a big Jaden Daniels fan. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I saw him so many times when he was out in the Pac-10. And I know they're loaded, but I think they're going to be tough. And I'm not sure about Ohio State. And I've never been a Michigan fan. But I'll say Michigan played hard-nosed football because I'm going to say Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, and Southern Cal. And I think Southern Cal doesn't play anybody.
And they've got a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to somebody last night. It's like they're going to try and light it up and try and impress people and, you know, and lay 50 and 60 on people to try and, you know, impress pollsters or whatever. And I think that's kind of what Lincoln Riley does out there in that conference. I think, you know, and I think that conference could be better with Penix up in Washington. And there's some good teams out there that nobody ever gets to see. But I do think that Southern Cal's the best team out there.
Hey, Bill, let's do it again soon. And make sure and come by the quad pregame and see us at the Town Square Media booth. And that's the last time I ran.
I'll definitely be there.
We'll do it again.
All right. I appreciate y'all having me on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill Lumpkin, our guest on Big Noon Sports. When we get back, we used to use the word. Now we're going to talk about it again. Disgraceful. That's what Paul Feinbaum said about a move the University of Alabama made. Woo, I think he went deep on this one. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage. And just as not really a footnote, but an add-on, that a lot of our Alabama interviews, most all of them, in fact, are presented by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group.
...24-7. You'll find road and utility crews, tow truck, law enforcement, and first responders working along Alabama's roadway.
We're making improvements and helping our communities stay connected.
We're working hard to make sure you're safe on the road. Now we need your help to make sure we're safe too.
Alabama's Move Over Law requires you to move over a lane when you see flashing lights on the roadside. And if you can't safely move over, please slow down.
Visit DriveSafeAlabama.org, brought to you by the Alabama Department of Transportation, Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Tide 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather. A sizzling summer afternoon, lots of sunshine, the high today near 100. For tonight, fair with the low at 75. Excessively hot weather again tomorrow and Saturday, partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs will stay very close to 100. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 98 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Indeed it is. Paul Feinbaum has come out in his reaction to Eli Gold doing home games and Chris Stewart doing the road games on the Crimson Tide Sports Network, of which Tide 100.9 is a proud member. But he came out during his appearance this morning on Mark Heim, who we had on yesterday, his show, the opening kickoff on WNSP in Mobile. He said, "I found the news yesterday to be disgraceful," Feinbaum told him. Picking up the quote, "Disgraceful because he told me, and I know he's told you, after spending 240 days in a hospital and working through cancer and overcoming it, inspiring thousands in the state and around the country to get him back in the booth, then have the rug pulled from under him is, to me, an affront." How does he know Alabama pulled the rug out? It seems to me that Eli probably had a lot to do with this decision. And by the way, and I didn't talk to him about this, but I ran into Eli. We both live kind of in the same area, but his is kind of at the top of the hill. Mine's kind of at the bottom. Actually, I mean that literally. But he and Claudette were in the parking lot, and my son and I were coming out from Sneaky Pete's. Free plug. I need a hot dog. But he was sitting in the car. I talked to him and said, "Hey, how'd it go? How'd it go with Tyler? You know," he said, "last couple of weeks you've done this Saturday." He said, "Fine. He sounded good. You look a little different when you spend 240 days in a hospital and you whip cancer's butt." But, and I know we're not going to do a deep dive because sometimes many know my history with this guy. I don't like fanning his flames. But this one to me was just so outrageous that I had to bring it up, because how the heck does he know? He's accusing Byrne of pulling the rug out from underneath their gold standard broadcaster.
Yeah.
Is that all you want to say?
All right.
We can go on to baseball. I'm okay with that.
I'll say this. He's taken a cue from the Clay Travis playbook, and that is the best way to get more eyeballs on you is to agitate Alabama fans. Agitate them. Hey, that's what Clay Travis does. Still does it. Agitate Alabama fans. And I have a good relationship with Paul. I like him. We used to have lunch every Tuesday at Nabil's.
Well, that's until he didn't need you anymore. Said that. Yeah. You did.
Okay. Yeah. I just don't know. It's strange to me. The only person that could have given Paul, let's just say that what Paul is alleging is accurate, that this was a Byrne decision not an Eli Gold decision. Where would that information come from? That would have to come from Eli. Eli is never going to throw Greg Byrne under the bus. Never. Never. Never.
Nope. So did it come from Byrne? So oh, I did this. Yeah, sure.
Well,
I
no, I just where who's the source? If you know,
I'll tell you who the source is. It's him. Yeah. That's Feinbaum.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's certainly not the first, or unfortunately, not the last time that he'll do that. But that's it. All right. Breaking news from this morning concerning Major League Baseball and Shohei Ohtani. He pitched a couple of innings. Had twins. He's been battling some injuries, but let's see. It was his torn his UCL, which is in his right elbow. So he will not pitch the rest of this year. The story I read didn't go into any great detail, but I said, you know, thinking that they use the word he will not pitch, he'll still hit. But that's a big time story moving forward, and maybe a lot of it because the Angels decided not to trade him.
Yeah. And there's a kind of a theory out there that the reason they didn't trade him is because they couldn't trade him because he wouldn't have passed a physical.
Ooh.
And I'm hearing Tommy John surgery, which used to be sort of like the end of a career, and it's nowhere near that anymore. But if he has Tommy John surgery, or if he needs it.
I think
it.
He had it.
He's had it
2-3 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Boy, that was so that's a tough blow. That's really a tough blow. A torn UCL. And you know, he's the best story in baseball. And he's one of the best stories in all of sports. And now, is it possible that his career as a pitcher is in jeopardy? Is it possible that
I don't know. He's kind of a Superman anyway, so maybe he heals faster.
Yeah.
and maybe he heals better and stronger. But he is the, as a player, he is the story. Of course, I'm a big time homer here, but I think the story in all of baseball is just how darn good the Atlanta Braves are.
And you're right. He has had Tommy John surgery before.
In 18?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to even bring this up, but is it possible, like I said, is it possible he never pitches again? But if he doesn't, will that make him a better hitter?
Well, he's like, got 44 dingers this year alone.
That would be the positive outlook on this, that, hey, maybe he could just be a hitter. I'm seeing a quote here from a surgeon who's well-respected and has performed Tommy John surgeries. And of course, it just went away.
Oh, of course.
But he said his point is you can come back from one Tommy John surgery. The odds of you coming back and pitching at a high level from a second Tommy John surgery.
I wouldn't think they'd have like the ligaments and stuff to do it again,
yeah.
Would they?
Yeah.
Because don't they take one from your forearm and put it in your elbow or your shoulder or something like that? I mean, it's a borrow from Peter to pay Paul type situation, as much as I know about the, you know. I am a weekend surgeon, by the way. that's a shame, but I had not heard the rumors that one of the reasons they didn't trade him was
because they couldn't.
Because
they knew he wouldn't pass the physical. But that's just, that's rough because he is a unicorn, one of a kind. Haven't seen anything like him since ever, is that right? Or who would be in the discussion of being an elite hitter and an elite pitcher?
The comparison is always Babe Ruth.
I mean, other than Babe, yeah. Is there anybody else?
Anybody else?
No. And when Ruth got to the Yankees, they stopped that. Yeah. And I think he still holds, and he certainly doesn't have as many appearances as a guy like Whitey Ford. But he, at one time, held the lowest ERA in World Series history. But I think that's when he's playing with the Sox.
And obviously he's becoming a free agent. And what will this do, you know, for his negotiations? I think we all expect him to go to the Dodgers, right? Isn't that the team that he's been linked to the most?
Yep.
Or maybe, who knows, maybe the Yankees would.
The Yankees are just a mess. Although lost, I think Aaron
Judge, just lost nine in a row for the first time since 82. But Judge went yard three times yesterday. But nonetheless, the season's over.
Shohei Ohtani's just amazing. He's got 44 dingers, which, by the way, one more than Matt Olson of the Atlanta Braves. But he's hitting 304 for a power hitter. And I'm trying to look, see where his RBIs are. 91 RBIs. He's on pace to hit maybe 60, 125 RBIs, and still bat 300. By the way, he has 10 wins and 5 losses in a 3 ERA. So now, if he can't pitch again, is he only worth half as much?
That's a good question.
I mean, obviously his value goes down, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. You remember Marquise Mays in the first few years of the Saban era?
I do.
Heck of a player. He could light it up. He will join us next hour as we continue on this Friday. Excuse me. Did I move a day ahead? It's Thursday.
It's Thursday. It kind of feels like Friday.
Well, let's just make it a Friday. What are you doing after the show?
We're heading to Innisfree.
We are heading to Innisfree. All right. We will return on the other side of the hour. You listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
I am
WTUG HD2 Northport and W265 CG Tuscaloosa. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. A Town Square Media Station.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Nine. Name a famous Alabama player that wore jersey number 9. Wouldn't that be Bryce Young?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know,
Mark Cooper, right? Two?
Yep. Tim Bob Harris, but I'm going back to my days here. Was he 9? Anyway, he was a safety and a darn good one. Good fella, too. But there are, I guess, people on Facebook to do these pages and all that kind of stuff, and they put up the jersey numbers, the equivalent of the number of days to kick off.
Yeah.
Yesterday was 10, and believe it or not, my first 10 that popped in my with Mac Jones, all the quarterbacks and all that, was Reuben Foster. Because he was just a ball-seeking missile. And by the way, I'm asking a question I don't know the answer. So, and we're in the same studio, so if you need to, throw something at me.
All right.
But where is he? I mean, with his year, with the Maulers, did he sign with somebody?
That's a good question.
Come on, Justin, do you know?
I don't think
Reuben Foster sign? And I don't think our buddy Jay Sternberger has. I haven't seen anything to that effect, and I thought both those USFL players would be in a camp right now. Although Sternberg is a little bit different guy. He may just be happy to, I'll just keep playing in the USFL. I like this gig. But Foster was like, I don't know if they named a defensive player of the year in the United States Football League, but he would have gotten my vote. I think he's big time. Go to the NFL and start.
Yeah, he was so good at Alabama. So good at Alabama.
One of the more amazing things in recruiting history, this was after he played at Auburn High School and tattooed the Auburn logo on his arm.
That's right.
Then he goes to Alabama.
Yep. Yeah, he's not currently in the NFL, Reuben Foster. I do want to circle back to a story that we mentioned in the first hour but didn't get to sort of tie a bow on it. And that is, so with Tua and NFL analyst for ESPN, Ryan Clark – So, to review, Ryan Clark, who is a safety, played for the Steelers for a lot of years, 13 years in the NFL. He joked earlier this week on an episode of NFL Live that that Tua looked like he had skipped the gym and that he, quote, he might have spent a lot of time in the tattoo parlor. He was not at the dinner table eating what the nutritionist had advised. Okay, so there you go. Ryan Clark just ripping into Tua. And then Tua was asked about it on Wednesday during his press conference. And he was asked sort of how hard did he work in the off season, and then he told reporters, quote, I think we all worked hard throughout the off season. I'm not one to talk about myself. I talk about the entire team, but it takes a lot. And he said, you think I wanted to build all this muscle? Like, to some extent, I wanted to be a little lighter. There's a mixture of things that people don't understand, that people don't know about, that are talked about, that go on behind the scenes. So, you know, I'd appreciate if you kept my mouth, or sorry, if you kept my name out of your mouth. That's what I would say. And so Tua was not happy. And then he added, and talking about Ryan Clark, he said, he probably knows more about me than I know about myself. I don't know. Ryan's been out of the league for some time. I don't know. It's a little weird when people are talking about the other people when they're not that person. Just a little weird. I come from a Samoan family. Respect is everything. But it does get to the point where, hey, you know what? Little easy on that, buddy. I think we're pretty tough-minded people. And if we need to get scrappy, we can get scrappy too. Just saying.
All right. You know what, can I give you a quick take on this?
Yes.
Overreact. I mean, come on, Tua. Do you think the guy was really that serious? I took his comments in jest.
They were meant to be in jest.
I think they were. I don't think his reaction is strictly from Ryan Clark. I think this is a culmination of all the
great everything.
It's collective, right? Because this has been going on for a while.
Well, and you know, the people that think he's less than tough. He does, you know, he has been injury prone, but that happens when you're slammed to the turf with about 600 pounds of force. But so, that's a good point. But Clark did what?
He apologized, but it was like an apology / non-apology because he said, I take accountability for it. I meant it as a joke. If I asked why I said it by Tua, I would tell him I have zero issues looking a man in the eye and telling my truth. I accept any consequence. And then he wrote that on Twitter, or now known as X. And then Clark, he also posted a video, and he said he, quote, genuinely apologized. And he kind of went on and on and on. But then he couldn't let it go because Tua had basically challenged him to a fight. And Ryan Clark was like, I made my living by being a violent person. And you want some? Come get it. Essentially, that's what I took from what Ryan Clark was saying.
I don't know if he meant it that way.
That's what he said.
I know.
I made my living with violence.
I think, though, the point of him saying that was he was calling out his ego and how his ego led to that. I think he seemed very authentic in the apology.
I don't know. Why even say that?
Fight.
Why does he even say that I'm a violent person? Why even say, his ego has nothing to do with what he said originally. But he's like, I have to respond to the fact that Tua wants to fight me.
He's tough-minded.
Maybe it's just like I understand why you would say, like, we can scrap because we can, you know. And
who are you taking in that fight?
Ryan Clark.
Oh, I'm taking Tua all day long.
Are you serious?
I have to remind myself how big Ryan Clark is because I'm leaning Ryan Clark. I think.
There's not enough poise in the world to get Tua through that fight.
Have you ever tussled with a Samoan?
Yeah, but, you know, Samoan and the Poi can get you so far. But the fact of the matter is, Ryan Clark's just dominating physically. And no, have you? Is that something you do in the offseason? No.
Are you getting in the Samoan judo and jiu-jitsu, and you're getting into that kind of fighting with them?
No.
Keep wanting to say Clark's sumo.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
He's only 5'11". Yeah.
All right, what are the dimensions
yeah,
of
Ryan Clark's
Clark?
Ryan Clark's not that big, is he?
He's 5'11", what?
Oh, I thought he was taller than that.
5'11", probably 195 now. I bet two outweighs him. Oh. Don't want to get a Samoan on the ground.
Well, I was thinking he was a little different physically. 5'11", 205 is what it says
here. I'm taking Tua. I don't know. It's just that was a stupid question. I don't believe in fighting. I don't promote fighting. There's always a way to figure things out without your fists.
Usually. But that has not been the history of this planet.
Have you ever, okay, let's explore this a little bit.
Uh-huh.
With both of you. Have you guys ever been in a serious fight in your life?
A few.
And did you end up on the ground, or did you end up standing above the guy bleeding?
I ended up
on
the ground, but I got back up. I would say that the two big fights I've gotten into my life ended up a draw. Oh. Because, you know, finally, man, I don't care. Boxers have such stamina. But fighting takes all your energy out. Anybody says they fought for 5 minutes is probably kidding.
I think that's why you see the UFC.
I got in a boxing ring one time for charity, and we're just kind of sparring around. But the other guy was a huge, he was like a kind of a professional boxer, but we were doing it for charity, okay? But he was a little bit more serious than charity. And, you're just kind of running around, you're sparring. I got the little pads on my ears in the boxing matches, and I'm doing that. And you just kind of, you know, throw punches and all that. But he reared back and clocked the crap out of me. And, you know, I don't care who you are. When that happens, you're going to react. Now, you may be Lars Anderson, the most peaceful man on earth. You're going to react.
Yeah.
I promise
you. I could see you, Matt, in a WWE uniform diving off the top rope.
I don't even believe in WWE. But anyway.
No, hold on. Wait. You need to answer the question here.
No. I mean, as a kid, I've fought and wrestled. I've not had
nothing like a fight like in high school. Nothing like in high school or college.
Even I try to avoid those situations, especially in college.
Because you're a lover and a talker, not a fighter. But 2 minutes in that ring, and that was as long as the round was, I had to crawl back to the corner. I was so physically exhausted. Ray Melick did it with me, and Ray said the same thing. And that was when I was like 28. I was in really good shape.
You know, our buddy Chris Walsh at Bama Central, he got in the ring once with Deontay Wilder. They're supposed just to kind of tap around, not do anything. Well, Chris ended up with a fractured orbital bone.
I wasn't aware Deontay Wilder could tap around. I thought he only had one.
The way Chris tells the story is just amazing. And actually, this goes back to what Bill Lumpkin, our first guest, he used the word Plimpton. George Plimpton was the one who pioneered participatory sports journalism, meaning you get in there and you end up writing a first person piece. And remember, he wrote Paper Lion.
And where the movie was pretty good too.
He became he played quarterback for the Lions in the preseason and just got absolutely smashed. Destroyed. Yeah. But, George, he was at Sports Illustrated for a long time, and he was one of my all-time favorite writers. Passed
away
many years ago.
You remember who played Plimpton in the movie?
Mm-mm.
Very unquarterback-like guy. Alan Alda.
Really?
Hawkeye.
I would not think Alan Alda would
play. Alex Karras played himself in that movie, and he was fantastic. Next thing you know, he's Mongo.
That's right.
One of the greatest characters in cinema history. Marquise Mays is next, former Bama wide receiver on Big Noon Sports.
Tide
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sizzling summer afternoon, lots of sunshine, the high today near 100. For tonight, fair with a low at 75. Excessively hot weather again tomorrow and Saturday, partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs will stay very close to 100. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 97 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. We got Justin Jones, Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter. Actually sitting in the Tide Studios today is quite nice. And there's one thing, it's a very nice, very functional studio. But man, believe it or not, it's 100 degrees outside. It is 57 in the studio.
So cold.
I have actually cracked the window. And listen to how weird this is. I'm trying to let heat in. And the heat index is 112. Anyway, we're trying to get in touch with Marquise Mays. What else is on your...
Well, you know, a story that is getting a lot of national play is the fact that Trey Lance, who the 49ers picked with the number 3 overall draft pick in 2021, and you got to remember that they traded 4 picks to acquire him, 3 first round picks and a third rounder. He's been demoted to third string, which effectively...
Not just backup.
Not backup. Backup is going to be Sam Darnold, who also a former high number one first round draft pick. Going to be backing up Mr. Irrelevant, the 7th round draft pick, 2 years ago, Brock Purdy. And Purdy, you know, he had that injury last year to his elbow late last year. But now he's fully healthy. And, you know, if the Niners had not, if John Lynch, who's the general manager, had not done such a good job of constructing this roster, he would be fired. Because this pick, this trade that they made to acquire Trey Lance in 2021 is going to go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history. I mean, it's got to be like in the top 5. You know, Herschel Walker trade being at the top, but the fact is that the Niners have a good team. They just need serviceable play at the quarterback position, kind of like Alabama this year. I think they just need to be just decent and have a quarterback that is not going to turn the ball over. So anyway, Brock Purdy is going to be the guy, and Trey Lance, excuse me, I think Trey Lance, after receiving the news, he didn't show up at the facility yesterday in Santa Clara, California, but he's back today, and John Lynch, again, the general manager, he said that although, you know, the team is exploring all options for Trey Lance, including a trade, he said that there's still a strong possibility that he'll remain on the team as the third string quarterback going into the season. And he said that's the most likely option. And you know why? Because nobody's going to – Trey Lance isn't worth anything anymore. And the problem is he was coming out of North Dakota State, didn't throw the ball hardly at all. Only in his COVID year, North Dakota State only played one game, and that was just to showcase Trey Lance. He didn't even play that well in that game. He just has not gotten any reps. And so why they would trade up to get him, I thought it was really curious at the time. We talked about it at the time.
But Mac was going to
be Mac Jones.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'd much rather have Mac Jones than Trey Lance right now.
I was that way at that time.
If they drafted Mac Jones, my take is they'd have a Super Bowl right now.
You think they'd have won with him instead of Purdy?
I think Mac Jones is like a better version of Brock Purdy, right? I mean, Brock Purdy is he's a good quarterback. Yeah. He was good at Iowa State, but he doesn't have the talent of Mac Jones.
Well, and I don't mean just his past season with Brock Purdy. I think, like Lars, you just said, similar talents there, Mac Jones and Brock Purdy. But saying Mac Jones doesn't get hurt like Lance does, I think they beat who'd they play, the Chiefs 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah.
I think they beat the Chiefs.
Really?
Instead of Garoppolo at quarterback.
I don't know, but I do know this. I remember watching that draft, and even up until they started the telecast, I was thinking, they're not really doing this, but then they'd already made the trade to get up. But weren't they at one time, weren't there people thinking they would trade up to get Mac?
Yeah.
And then when they drafted Lance, everybody, I think everybody's. People aren't happy in San Francisco. And what did he sign for? Do you have the numbers in front? Trey.
As a third pick, it's going to be probably around $20 million.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
But, you know, they're not all going to turn into Josh Allen. Because where did Josh Allen play? Like Montana State?
Josh Allen played at Wyoming.
Wyoming, yeah.
That Trey Lance contract, $34 million over 4 years.
Oh. Well, what's the old saying? He's laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
Man, and he's taking like, what, 5% of the snaps now?
Yeah. I mean, and you go back and you do an analysis of that draft. Of the 12 players drafted after Trey Lance, seven have already been to Pro Bowls, including Jamar Chase.
You love Cincinnati Bengals. He was open.
He's my guy. Because my son, Lincoln, his favorite player is Jamar Chase, and so I got him a big head. So there's like a
well, and Lincoln's not a tall guy. No, so that's times his height.
Yeah, yeah. And those are harder to put up than you would imagine.
It doesn't
seven Pro Bowlers. Jamar Chase, Kyle Pitts, right, tight end, who was at Florida and now with Atlanta. Offensive tackle, Penei Sewell. Patrick Surtain the second, we know a little bit about. Micah Parsons, maybe the best defensive player in the league. Rashawn Slater, who's a really good offensive tackle. Mac Jones has been to a Pro Bowl, and the Dolphins. So they with the 49ers traded with the Dolphins, right, to move up. And so far, guess who the Dolphins have parlayed those picks into?
This is good. I like it.
Jalen Waddle.
Okay. That alone.
Tyreek Hill.
Okay. They used
they got him because they had those extra picks. And Bradley Chubb. Who's a really good pass rusher, one of the better ones. And the Eagles were also somewhat involved in the trade. And they used the picks that were acquired by trading with Miami to get Miami to Waddle. They used the pick that they got essentially from the trade to pick Devontae Smith, wide receiver. Wow.
Two Bama wide receivers are in there, and then Tyreek Hill played at West Alabama.
And the 49ers' original pick that year was the 12th overall draft pick, and that was the pick that the Cowboys used to take Micah Parsons. The more you dig into this, just the absolute worst, it looks so bad.
Worse
so
than Ryan
bad.
Leaf. Of course, nobody traded to get Ryan Leaf, which I think that's the big.
They didn't have to. San Diego didn't have to give up anything. They were just picking number two overall. It's just tough because he entered the NFL. Remember, he was a FCS quarterback. At North Dakota State, he only played one full season at North Dakota State. And since middle school, Trey Lance had only attempted about 640 passes.
Huh?
Since middle school. You guys in the NFL who throw 640 pass attempts in one season.
right?
And more.
Well, and you have to remember, too, they drafted him coming out of North Dakota State. They didn't play that COVID year.
Yeah, they played that one game.
Yeah, one game. They played one game.
He didn't even play a full season.
And then he chipped a bone in his finger during his rookie preseason. And he basically couldn't throw a normal all year. And then at the start of his second season, he broke his ankle. And he missed the rest of the year. And so it's just it's a combination of injury and also because these are two key developmental years, right? Your rookie year, your second year, you should be good to go by your third year if you're picked that high in the first round. But he didn't get a chance to develop. And I don't know, is there untapped potential there? Maybe. I mean, he's a year younger than Will Levis, right? Who was just picked this last year out of Kentucky by the Titans.
Got hurt, didn't he?
Yeah.
Levis.
Yeah. Oh, he did? Did he just get hurt? I'm not sure.
I don't know why I threw that in there. I interrupted you.
But yeah, I apparently the Vikings are interested in him because this is Kirk Cousins' last year, and I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to get re-signed. But it certainly appears that the Niners are just kind of stuck with him for at least another year. But man, just trading up for a quarterback, it is a high risk, can be high reward. Or
did they list or tell anybody particular reasons why he was so unsuccessful and he dropped a third?
Who's that?
Trey Lance. I mean, is he just like overthrowing everybody? Is he not handing the ball?
Oh,
not
getting the system? He's inaccurate. He's inaccurate. He doesn't know where to go with the ball. He's trouble reading defenses. He looks completely lost out there. I mean,
what the scouting report was? It he just had a really good PR department. You think if you're going to invest $34 million, you do a lot of research.
Yeah.
So do you think there's a chance? You can't really blame
Trey Lance. You know, it wasn't.
Well, if I spent $34 million, I'm going to blame somebody, and that would be the first one.
I think you blame the general manager. And the head coach.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch.
Because you'd think Kyle Shanahan would. I don't know anything about Lynch.
Apparently,
the
word on the street is that Shanahan wanted Mac Jones. The general manager overruled him, John Lynch, and he wanted Trey Lance.
Lynch, a former player?
Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame, safety.
He
didn't play quarterback. Oops.
But
you know what? That trade eventually will come back to haunt. I mean, I know the 49ers are really good right now, and they have a chance to reach the Super Bowl, all that. But eventually, that trade is going to come back to haunt this franchise because they're missing out on the depth and quality starters that they would have acquired through those high picks that they gave up.
When we get back, we're going to hear from head coach Nick Saban.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
I mean, I think just about every time something bad happens, and when I say bad happens, I'm talking about an explosive play. It's either about missed tackles or mental errors. And I think we've gotten better at eliminating, you know, some of those. But one of the things I didn't think we did as well in the last scrimmage as the first scrimmage is tackle. And, you know, that goes back to how you practice. You know, we don't really ever and have never practiced where you tackle people in practice. But you have to thud them, right? So you get in position to tackle the guy, you near leg your shoulder, you wrap the guy up. So you're always in position to tackle. And if you do that consistently, then when you have to tackle people, you're going to be in the right position. And that's something that we really emphasize with our players, you know, this week to try to improve the tackling.
Well, that's Nick Saban, and he's talking about tackling. And I, you know, the more I think about it, you just don't hit anymore. So he's talking about locking them up. That's still not the same as getting the guy on the ground. And I imagine that is a little bit tough because you just don't want to hit a lot, Lars. You don't want anybody to get hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
fine line. Fine line.
You get hurt in non-contact. Just look at the NFL.
Yeah, Jerry Judy this morning.
Joe Burrow. By the way. Is he okay, Lars? Are you okay?
Yeah. No, he's going to be fine. I'll say this real quick, Matt, that there's another statement that Nick Saban made that has all of sort of Alabama fans buzzing and wondering.
Game. It's a game.
So since, okay, Nick Saban has seen 18 scholarship players leave via the transfer portal in the last year. But on Wednesday, yesterday, Coach Saban admitted that he's only shaken up over one of them. And we're going to get to that in a second.
We will do that.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's been a big guessing game. And if we got the clip, all right. Oh, we got Marquise Mays. All right.
Well, things move fast here
in Big News Sports. Yes.
But we want to get back to that clip because it does. It's a fun game. You and I played it on the way over here.
We did.
Who is he talking about? Anyway, Marquise Mays, former Alabama Crimson Tiger, return man, wide receiver, he's joining us. And let me set this up properly from your buddy Ron there, Marquise. You will be at the Bama Arcade and More, which is there in Dora. I love Dora. It's right there in the Piggly Wiggly group, right there at that corner, that intersection. You'll be there Saturday, September 9th at 11 a.m. What were you doing, signing autographs, that kind of stuff, and serving food? What are you going to be doing, Marquise?
I'll just be signing autographs and taking pictures.
Before we get into this, this is not something you're going to get in many interviews. You and I have a lot in common, and let me trust me, it is not athletically. But my grandsons and your sons played on the same football teams last year. Don't you have a son that's 12 and another one that's like 8?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know what they were, Lars? Really fast. I remember going to the first practice, and it was almost like a cartoon. My grandson's a pretty good player. Both of them are. And believe it or not, looking at me, they're fairly fast. But when they would run their gassers at the end of practice, Marquise would be coming back, and the other kids were still going in the same direction. You got pretty good kids and good players.
Yes, sir.
Marquise, tell everybody what you're doing these days.
Well, I'm just, like you say, man, I'm just taking care of those kids, man, and trying to be the best father I could be. That's pretty much what I'm doing right now.
Marquise, going back to your recruitment, and you had originally committed to Michigan. But then you decided to, after Nick Saban came, and in February 2007, you signed a letter of intent with Alabama. Can you just take us back to that time and why you decided to switch from Michigan to Alabama, and what role did Nick Saban play in that?
Oh, man, you're taking me back some time. 2007. Well, you know, I had well over 100 offers from different schools. The reason that, to be honest, to be completely honest with you, it was my junior year. I was out horse playing and broke my foot, and I just sporadically committed to Michigan the same day because I thought they were going to take my scholarship away. So I just committed to Michigan that day, and I really didn't know much about Michigan besides watching it on TV and things like that. But when I took my visit, it just wasn't a place I wanted to go. To spend the next 3 to 5 years of my life. January of my senior year, Nick Saban gets hired, and most coaches tell you what you want to hear. You're going to come in and start, you're going to be this All-American, all of this good stuff. And Nick Saban just told me the truth, that you'll have an opportunity to play, but we not promising nothing. So, I mean, I just felt like his honesty was good enough for me.
Do you take pride in being a part of Nick Saban's first recruiting class at Alabama? And just talk to us a little bit about the relationship you have with other guys in that class.
Man, it's a very special relationship with the guys in that class. We all kind of stay connected. And I think you got guys like Tavis and Rolando and Josh Chapman and guys of that nation, man. We still talk to this day, man. It's like, man, we are brothers. We built a bond that, I mean, is unbreakable, I believe. At this point, it's an unbreakable bond.
When you were first in Alabama, from being recruited by Saban until going on to win 2 national championships, this may kind of sound like a lame question, but it was right there in front of your eyes. What developed so quickly to turn Alabama into an average team, into a Marquise Med-led national championship team?
I would say just the approach. Most of the guys that I came in with in 07, man, nobody was used to losing. So that first year, man, was kind of tough for a lot of us guys. I think most of us came together. After that year, man, we had a few guys that didn't buy in to what Nick Saban was trying to teach. And it was like, man, we are actually his guys. So we have to take a different approach to football than those guys did. And we have to take a different approach to coaching than those guys did, because they come from another coach, and none of us ever played for that coach. So we bought into what coach was saying, I think the will of not liking or wanting to lose is what pushed us over the hump, man, along with good coaching and the support we had from the fans and stuff like that.
In the documentary that just came out about Florida and the 6 years of Urban Meyer, or covered a 6-year span, Tim Tebow, I don't know if you got a chance to see this, but Tim Tebow said of the 2009 SEC championship game, which, from an outside observer like myself, that was a really key moment for you guys. And I've talked to Greg McElroy about it, and it wasn't necessarily like wanting to win the national championship. It was wanting to get back to the SEC championship and take on Florida. But in the documentary, Tim Tebow said, well, Alabama, they were playing like they had nothing to lose. Well, the fact is, you guys are 12-0, ranked second in the country, and had a chance to go on to play for the national championship. So I kind of viewed that as a little bit of revisionist history. But what do you remember about that game? And is it accurate, to say that that really was the key game of the 2009 national championship winning season?
I wouldn't say that was the key game. I would say games leading up to it was the key game. Actually coming back to beat Auburn and Cody blocking the field goal against Tennessee. So those were some key games. But Yeah, that was our mindset, man, was beat a team that we thought we should have beat the year before. We had every opportunity to beat them. We let it slip away. And we knew we were a better team. So I actually did get a chance to see the documentary, and one of the guys did mention that they should have won in 2008. And I'm like, nah, man. Y'all didn't stand a chance. and they just said how much talent they had on the team. But I guess they just looking at it from their standpoint. But we also had a tremendous amount of talent on our team, too.
Yeah, just from a journalism standpoint, I thought the producers did a really bad job. Why didn't you? That is such a key game for both Florida and Alabama. Why not interview Alabama players? Why not interview Marquise Mays? Were you kind of surprised by that? I mean, what was your just whole take of the documentary as a former Alabama player who lived through that time period and played through it?
I guess it was that, to me, I didn't see anything wrong with it. I actually took a visit with some of those guys. So it was good to see some guys that, like, we took visit in high school and stuff that I haven't seen in years, man. And, the story is more about Florida than Alabama. So I don't take it as if they needed to interview Alabama players, but because it was more about their program. Because I don't think if they did something for Alabama, they should interview other players about a documentary for us.
Well, you personally were able to get back in Florida. You threw a touchdown pass to Michael Williams. You played quarterback at Tarrant, right? So
yeah,
it wasn't like you couldn't spin one, but that must have been pretty cool as a wide receiver.
Oh yeah, it was very cool, man. I got the opportunity. Well, you know, it was a good moment for me because I really felt underused at Alabama because I got to watch guys like David Palmer and, you know, Tyrone Proto. Those guys got to do a lot within the offense. And I personally, that's what I was in high school. Like, I was an athlete. I played running back. I played quarterback. I played receiver. I played safety. I played corner. So when I didn't get those opportunities, and I know that it's college level, but I felt underused. But, you know, I don't regret ever going to Alabama, but that was a very, very key moment for me just to show the world that there was other things that I could do.
You were an electric player, Marquise. Hey, we appreciate your time. One again, everybody that is in the area. And by the way, you do this earlier enough in the day. I guess you can go to the game that night. The 11 o'clock appearance at Bama Arcade and More, Saturday, September 9th. Marquise Mays will be there, sign autographs, and chat with you. Hey, you were an electric player to watch. We appreciate you joining us, Marquise.
All right, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Marquise. Also, just want to make one more quick announcement. Matt and I are going to be at Greystone Legacy in Birmingham for a golf tournament on Thursday, August 31. It is the Bridgeways tournament, the Kathleen P. Bruhn Memorial Leadership Open, and it's going to be a lot of fun. They still have openings available. To inquire about it, you can reach out to our good friend Patty Bromberg at 205-208-3045. Again, that's 205-208-3045. That's the Bridgeways Kathleen P. Bruhn Memorial Leadership Open, Thursday, August 31 at Greystone Legacy.
Who is Nick Saban talking about? We'll get our opinions on the other side of this break as you listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Barry Buckner.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A sizzling summer afternoon, lots of sunshine, the high today near 100. For tonight, fair with a low at 75. Excessively hot weather again tomorrow and Saturday, partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs will stay very close to 100. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 97 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
I don't know who you're specifically, you know, talking about, but you know, guys are getting transfer portal. This is not for everybody. Okay, so maybe people that want to be here, want to be good, want to do the best they can, develop value for their future and who they are as a person, what kind of requirements we have for them to succeed academically so they can develop a career on the field, and what we're going to do to try to develop them on the field. And I think I'm not mentioning any names, but there's only like one player that I was really like disappointed that, you know, the guy didn't stay here, and I couldn't understand why he was leaving. And you know, and all the rest of them, they would have contributed if they stayed and had the right attitude, but it's their choice. And you know what we have an opportunity to do when guys leave is we have an opportunity to replace them too.
And they do. But I'm just looking at the transfer portal from I think this past season, and I guess everybody's got a guess. And we're going to limit it this year because I couldn't really tell, Lars. Was he talking about of all the transfers?
I think he was just speaking about this year.
For our topic.
There's 18, within the last year. So 18 scholarship players have left via the transfer portal in the last year. And again, just to amplify what Nick Saban just said, he basically said that only one has shaken him up. That he didn't understand why he'd left. So Alabama fans now are guessing who's that player.
So let's play Who's That Player on Big Noon Sports. Now, you and I played on the way over here. We both have our guesses. So let's talk with Justin. What transfer portal Alabama player is Nick Saban referring to?
I want to say it was the linebacker Drew Sanders that went to Arkansas.
That was the year before, though.
Oh, the year before.
But I talked about that on the way over because talent-wise, kid could play.
I'm not sure then. I have been looking at it on Twitter. I saw the name. He's a wide receiver. Is it like Aaron Anderson?
There's an Aaron Anderson.
There is. He's a former five-star. Tommy Brockemeyer, former five-star. Perhaps
Tyler Harrell, who had all the speed, but he couldn't break through because of injury last year.
JoJo Earl.
That's mine. That's
yeah.
My
you
selection.
Know what? I have come around. I think he's talking about JoJo Earl because it's so rare for Nick Saban to unsolicited mention a freshman's name in a press conference in preseason, and he did that about JoJo Earl. I think he just believed in JoJo Earl, could have been a huge player here, and ended up transferring. So that's my guess.
But you had another guess over on the way over, and I think you had a really good reason for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was thinking Trey Sanders, Trey Sanders, who had been through a car accident and just, you know, he'd endured a lot here in Tuscaloosa. And I feel like the coaching staff, the trainers were really invested in him. I would love to get Ryan Fowler's opinion on this. If
Ryan in the studio.
Yeah.
Ryan!
Ryan. Got a question for you. Got a question for you, Mr. Fowler.
What is the question?
The question is, and you know, I know you're going to talk about this on your show in a couple minutes.
Aaron Anderson.
Okay, I didn't even ask you the question.
Said, but Aaron Anderson is where I would go.
I went JoJo Earl.
You know, both of those guys would have a role in this.
What about Christian Leary? I mean, that guy had speed and then some, but when he got on the field, yeah, it was kind of high.
I would go Aaron Anderson. I just think when you look at the dynamic playmaker. But listen, I was on another show this morning. I was on two. I said JoJo Earl, too, because I think it could be either one of those guys. You know, just catch. You know, what is a receiver supposed to do? What did Nick Saban say?
Yeah.
He catches the ball. Yeah. We're having trouble with that out there. I don't know. That seems to be an element. If they don't get that worked out, that could be a.
Where did JoJo Earl end up?
TCU.
And were y'all not surprised when he transferred? Because, I mean, some of them you're not surprised by. I'm not surprised that the other Brockemeyer did.
But NIL funding.
You
know what I mean. And matter of fact, they were coming strong after Jalen Milroe. They were working that. They ended up getting the young man, I believe, from Oregon State, I think is where they went to, and got a quarterback to kind of go into that direction. So that's a – that's a little bit of a, you know, it's what you're having to deal with. But I would go Aaron Anderson. I think he got homesick. I think that's where Coach Saban was like, I never got a true explanation. But he'll tell you a lot of things and only one guy. So
that's pretty interesting. Were you surprised that Nick Saban just said, hey, you know what, take it or leave it, but hey, there is one.
I was a little bit, but, you know, he's told us before in other media availability, he said, I've been known to walk them to the portal. Like, I guess, and I don't know what it's like. Do you guys ever have this photo, like, of this computer sitting somewhere yes. in a hallway where they type in their name? He said it before that we have walked them to put their name in the transfer portal. I think it's done through compliance, but I just see this, you know, like old style Apple computer, like the big thick ones sitting in a hallway where they type out their name and officially put themselves. They don't have to see a coach. They can do it on their own.
Well, and would they have to have a witness?
What I'm
just laying out there.
That would be a prank. I mean, like, you know, April Fool's.
Here's my analysis. Not that anybody really cares, but I think of the 18 that left, 17 were essentially shown the door by the coaches based on where they were in the depth chart. And there was one that was not shown the door.
In this case, it's not the door, it's the laptop.
We're actually going to talk with Coach Tuberville at 2:20 about all this pandering going on in college football and what can actually be done. You guys talked about it last Thursday with the Missouri situation.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring that up because all these states are creating their own legislative proposals, which is just a chaos.
How did you get Tommy Tuberville?
You know how long we had?
They sent me a text and said, hey, can we put
Tuberville on? Man, there's some heads going to roll on that one. No offense. Good for you. But I tried for a month to get that done. We had it set up.
I'll give you his publicist.
No, I know his publicist. Yeah. And now she's going to know me better.
Oh, you got Coulter fired up?
Oh, man, that's... I'm glad you had her. Certainly nothing against you. But we had it all set up and ready to go. Somebody had to go out of town. And then they...
I think Tommy...
You know what? I'm as mad as you were yesterday about Kenny Anderson.
I think you found out that I was Walt Maddox's speechwriter.